Chapter 4. The commonest dream of my early childhood was something like this. It seemed that I was very small, and that I lay curled up in a sort of nest of twigs and boughs. Sometimes I was lying on my back. In this position it seemed that I spent many hours, watching the play of sunlight on the foliage, and the stirring of the leaves by the wind. Often the nest itself moved back and forth, when the wind was strong. But always, while so lying in the nest, I was mastered, as of tremendous space beneath me. I never saw it, I never peered over the edge of the nest to see, but I knew and feared that space, that lurked just beneath me, and that ever threatened me like a maw of some all-devouring monster. This dream, in which I was quiescent, and which was more like a condition than an experience of action, I dreamed very often in my early childhood. But suddenly, there would rush into the very midst of its strange forms and ferocious happenings, the thunder and crashing of storm, or unfamiliar landscapes such as in my wake-a-day life I had never seen. The result was confusion and nightmare. I could comprehend nothing of it. There was no logic of sequence. You see, I did not dream consecutively. One moment I was a wee babe of the younger world lying in my tree nest. The next moment I was a grown man of the younger world locked in combat with the hideous red eye. And the next moment I was creeping carefully down to the water hole in the heat of the day. Events, years apart in their occurrence in the younger world, occurred with me within the space of several minutes, or seconds. It was all a jumble, but this jumble I shall not inflict upon you. It was not until I was a young man, and had dreamed many thousand times, that everything straightened out, and became clear and plain. Then it was that I got the clue of time, and was able to piece together events and actions in their proper order. Thus was I able to reconstruct the vanished younger world as it was at the time I lived in it, or at the time my other self lived in it. The distinction does not matter, for I too, the modern man, have gone back and lived that early life in the company of my other self. For your convenience, since this is to be no sociological screed, I shall frame together the different events into a comprehensive story. For there is a certain thread of continuity and happening that runs through all the dreams. There is my friendship with Lop-Ear, for instance. Also, there is the enmity of Red Eye, and the love of the Swift One. Taking it all in all, a fairly coherent and interesting story, I am sure you will agree. I do not remember much of my mother. Possibly the earliest recollection I have of her, and certainly the sharpest, is the following. It seemed I was lying on the ground. I was somewhat older than during the nest days, but still helpless. I rolled about in the dry leaves, playing with them and making crooning, rasping noises in my throat. The sun shone warmly, and I was happy and comfortable. I was in a little open space. Around me, on all sides, were bushes and fern-like growths, and overhead and all about were the trunks and branches of forest trees. Suddenly I heard a sound. I sat upright and listened. I made no movement. The little noises died down in my throat, and I sat as one petrified. The sound drew closer. It was like the grunt of a pig. Then I began to hear the sounds caused by the moving of a body through the brush. Next I saw the ferns agitated by the passage of the body. Then the ferns parted, and I saw gleaming eyes, a long snout, and white tusks. It was a wild boar. He peered at me curiously. He grunted once or twice, and shifted his weight from one foreleg to the other, at the same time moving his head from side to side, and swaying the ferns. Still I sat as one petrified, my eyes unblinking as I stared at him, fear eating at my heart. It seemed that this movelessness and silence on my part was what was expected of me. I was not to cry out in the face of fear. It was a dictate of instinct. And so I sat there and waited for I knew not what. The boar thrust the ferns aside, and stepped into the open. The curiosity went out of his eyes, and they gleamed cruelly. He tossed his head at me threateningly, and advanced a step. This he did again, and yet again. Then I screamed. That daughter shrieked, I cannot describe it, but it was a shrill and terrible cry. And it seems that it too, at this stage of the proceedings, was the thing expected of me. From not far away came an answering cry. My sound seemed momentarily to disconcert the boar, and while he halted and shifted his weight with indecision, an apparition burst upon us. She was like a large orangutan, my mother, or like a chimpanzee, and yet, in sharp and definite ways, quite different. She was heavier of build than they, and had less hair. Her arms were not so long, and her legs were stouter. She wore no clothes, only her natural hair. And I can tell you she was a fury when she was excited. And like a fury she dashed upon the scene. She was gritting her teeth, making frightful grimaces, snarling, uttering sharp and continuous cries that sounded like H-A, K-H-A. So sudden and formidable was her appearance, that the boar involuntarily bunched himself together on the defensive, and bristled as she swerved toward him. Then she swerved toward me. She had quite taken the breath out of him. I knew just what to do in that moment of time as he had gained. I leaped to meet her, catching her about the waist and holding on hand and foot, yes, by my feet. I could hold on by them as readily as by my hands. I could feel in my tense grip the pull of the hair as her skin and her muscles moved beneath with her efforts. As I say, I leaped to meet her, and on the instant she leaped straight up into the air, catching an overhanging branch with her hands. The next instant, with clashing tusks, the boar drove past underneath. He had recovered from his surprise and sprung forward, emitting a squeal that was almost a trumpeting. At any rate it was a call, for it was followed by the rushing of bodies through the ferns and brush from all directions. From every side wild hogs dashed into the open space, a score of them. But my mother swung over the top of a thick limb, a dozen feet from the ground, and, still holding on to her, we perched there in safety. She was very excited. She chattered and screamed, and scolded down at the bristling, tooth-gnashing circle that had gathered beneath. I too, trembling, peered down at the angry beasts, and did my best to imitate my mother's cries. From the distance came similar cries, only pitched deeper, into a sort of roaring bass. These grew momentarily louder, and soon I saw him approaching, my father at least. By all the evidence of the times, I am driven to conclude that he was my father. He was not an extremely prepossessing father, as fathers go. He seemed half man, and half ape, and yet not ape, and not yet man. I fail to describe him. There is nothing like him today on the earth, under the earth, nor in the earth. He was a large man in his day, and he must have weighed all of 130 pounds. His face was broad and flat, and the eyebrows overhung the eyes. The eyes themselves were small, deep-set, and close together. He had practically no nose at all. It was squat and broad, apparently without any bridge, while the nostrils were like two holes in the face, opening outward instead of down. The forehead slanted back from the eyes, and the hair began right at the eyes, and ran up over the head. The head itself was preposterously small, and was supported on an equally preposterous, thick, short neck. There was an elemental economy about his body as was there about all our bodies. The chest was deep, it is true, cavernously deep, but there were no full swelling muscles, no wide spreading shoulders, no clean limb straightness, no generous symmetry of outline. It represented strength, that body of my father's, strength without beauty, ferocious, primordial strength, made to clutch, and gripe and rend and destroy. His hips were thin, and the legs, lean and hairy, were crooked and stringy muscled. In fact, my father's legs were more like arms. They were twisted and gnarly, and with scarcely the semblance of the full meaty calf such as graces your leg and mine. I remember he could not walk on the flat of his foot. This was because it was a prehensile foot, more like a hand than a foot. The great toe, instead of being in line with the other toes, opposed them, like a thumb, and its opposition to the other toes was what enabled him to get a grip with his foot. This was why he could not walk on the flat of his foot. But his appearance was no more unusual than the manner of his coming there to my mother and me as we perched above the angry wild pigs. He came through the trees, leaping from limb to limb, and from tree to tree, and he came swiftly. I can see him now, in my wake-a-day life, as I write this, swinging along through the trees, a four-handed hairy creature, howling with rage, pausing now and again, to beat his chest with his clenched fist, leaping 10 and 15 foot gaps, catching a branch with one hand and swinging on across another gap, to catch with his other hand and go on, never hesitating, never at a loss, as to how to proceed on his arboreal way. And as I watched him, I felt in my own being, in my very muscles themselves, the surge and thrill of desire, to go leaping from bough to bough, and I felt also the guarantee of the latent power in that being, and in those muscles of mine. And why not? Little boys watch their fathers swing axes and fell trees, and feel in themselves that someday they too will swing axes and fell trees. And so with me. The life that was in me was constituted to do what my father did, and it whispered to me secretly and ambitiously of aerial paths and forest flights. At last my father joined us. He was extremely angry. I remember the outthrust of his protruding underlip as he glared down at the wild pigs. He snarled something like a dog, and I remember that his eye teeth were large, like fangs, and that they impressed me tremendously. His conduct served only the more to infuriate the pigs. He broke off twigs and small branches, and flung them down upon our enemies. He even hung by one hand, tantalizingly just beyond reach, and mocked them as they gnashed their tusks with impotent rage. Not content with this, he broke off a stout branch, and, holding on with one hand and foot, jabbed the infuriated beasts in the sides, and whacked them across their noses. Needless to state, my mother and I enjoyed the sport. But one tires of all good things, and in the end, my father, chuckling maliciously the while, led the way across the trees. Now it was that my ambitions ebbed away, and I became timid, holding tightly to my mother as she climbed and swung through space. I remember when the branch broke with her weight. As he had made a wide leap, and with the snap of the wood I was overwhelmed with the sickening consciousness of falling through space, the pair of us. The forest and the sunshine on the rustling leaves vanished from my eyes. I had a fading glimpse of my father abruptly arresting his progress to look, and then all was blackness. The next moment I was awake, in my sheeted bed, sweating, trembling, nauseated. The window was up, and a cool air was blowing through the room. The night lamp was burning calmly. And because of this, I take it that the wild pigs did not get us, that we never fetched bottom, else I should not be here now, 1,000 centuries after, to remember the event. And now put yourself in my place for a moment. Walk with me a bit in my tender childhood. Bed with me a night, and imagine yourself dreaming such incomprehensible horrors. Remember, I was an inexperienced child. I had never seen a wild boar in my life. For that matter, I had never seen a domesticated pig. The nearest approach to one that I had seen was breakfast bacon sizzling in its fat. And yet here, real as life, wild boars dashed through my dreams, and I, with fantastic parents, swung through the lofty tree spaces. Do you wonder that I was frightened and oppressed by my nightmare-ridden nights? I was accursed. And, worst of all, I was afraid to tell. I do not know why, except that I had a feeling of guilt, though I knew no better of what I was guilty. So it was, through long years, that I suffered in silence, until I came to man's estate, and learned the why and wherefore of my dreams. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.